Congress signed off on the National Park Service 100 years ago this August. The idea was, and still is, to preserve special places and make sure people can visit them. These aren't exactly values you can measure in board feet. Though the Park Service does do some accounting. Every year it works with the U.S. Geological Survey to figure out the economic impact of every single park. That's visitors, jobs, and money spent in communities within 60 miles of the parks. This breakdown for 2015 recently came out, and representatives from some Oregon parks are with us now to discuss. We have Jennifer Evans, spokesperson for Crater Lake National Park. Jennifer, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is George Herring, chief of interpretation from Oregon Caves National Monument and Preserve. George, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Emily. Good morning.
And last but not least, John Roth is here, Oregon Caves Chief of Resource Management. Hi, John.
Hey, thank you.
So, Jen, this first one is for you. The National Park Service's economic report for 2015 puts Crater Lake at over 600,000 visitors in the last year. How much money is tied to all of those people coming to Crater Lake?
So the 614,000 visitors that we had in 2015 spent about $52 million in the local community. And that $52 million, that's direct visitor spending, so that's hotels, restaurants, and fuel to get here and to get home, supporting 887 local jobs. All in all, that's about $71 million in contributions to the local economy.
So when you say direct spending, that's their camping, their gas, their groceries. The lion's share, if I'm correct here, is hotel expenses. Is that right?
That's right. So that's we do have concessioners that are within the park, so at the lodge and then some cabins that are in the park and a concessioner-run campground. But that includes all of the little bed and breakfasts that are around the park, hotels in local communities, camping outside of the park. Anywhere that people lodge where they have to spend some money.
So how does that $52 million that comes right out of people's wallets into businesses around here or into services, how does that become $71
million? Well, that the $71 million includes the total contribution. So there's a ripple effect. So restaurants that serve visitors to national parks have to buy groceries. Hotels have to buy supplies, things like that. So it includes the ripple effect. It also includes the salaries of people who work for concessioners or for these local businesses that serve visitors to the national parks. So people who work for those businesses also spend money in the community, so propping up the community a little bit more.
So these numbers are up from last year, and I think they're up from the last few years. Did the park get significantly more visitors? We're talking about Crater Lake National Park with a spokesperson from there, Jennifer Evans.
We did. So 2015, we saw a 14.7% increase in visitation over 2014. And a lot of that was due to the fact that 2015, we just didn't get the snow that we normally do. So we were able to open facilities a month sooner than we normally do. That means a lot more visitors were coming earlier in the season, and they stayed later in the season than they normally do. The National Park Service saw a smaller increase, but still it was a record-breaking year for the Park Service in terms of visitation. But the Crater Lake saw 14.7, which is, I mean, an incredible increase year over year.
14.7. What's the unit on that?
Sorry, so in 2014, we received 535,000 recreational visits.
Oh, percent, yeah, a percent increase. Okay.
Yep.
I want to bring in George Herring, Chief of Interpretation for Oregon Caves National Monument. Hi, George. The report shows that 73,000 visitors spent about $4.5 million in the community surrounding the Oregon Caves. How does that stack up with recent history there?
It stacks up fairly well. We've been seeing, just like Crater Lake, an increase over time. Last year, as you said, we got 73,000, and locally we support about 75 jobs. I think mostly I would echo what you just heard.
What kinds of jobs are supported by, what kinds of jobs does Oregon Caves take credit for, I guess, in an economic impact report like this?
Well, I think the folks that most immediately benefit is the Chateau at the Oregon Caves, which hires people for both the lodging and the restaurant operations. They're actually a nonprofit, and their purpose is to try to promote local jobs for local people. But outside of that, we have at the base of the Caves Highway, we have gas stations, we have grocery stores, we have a lot of retail purchasing going on associated with the caves. So those things are definitely an important economic infusion into the Cave Junction community.
We have a question here from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. I'm not sure exactly what he's asking, but he dropped it off. He says, how much of the money leaves the area and goes to the federal government? And I'm assuming he's talking about the direct visitor fees that people pay.
Well, the fees that come into the park, here we have tour fees. It's an amenity fee. 100% of those fees return to the park specifically, and a good chunk of that goes into paying the tour guides that we have here at the park. We also have a contract with our Natural History Association, which takes care of running the visitor center and collecting the fees themselves. All the remaining funds go into maintenance projects here at the park, which are largely for things like keeping the roads paved, making sure the water is flowing. So all of that money ultimately comes back into this park and then secondarily goes into the local community.
I want to kick it over to John Roth. We haven't heard from him yet. John is Chief of Resource Management for the Oregon Caves. John, I want to ask, are more visitors, you're seeing an increase in visitorship at the Oregon Caves. Is that necessarily a good thing? Can the resource handle more people?
Yes, it can handle more people. We've actually, in the past, we've had almost double the visitation back in the 1970s. Through going through the cave for a variety of reasons. One is we were one of only a few major attractions in Southern Oregon at the time. And so we didn't notice really any major resource damage. And since that time, we've improved better protection for our bats, installation of new gates and other things. So we feel that we can easily handle that amount of visitation through the caves. I should mention, though, that we do not operate during the wintertime, and part of the reason for that is not only economics, but also simply to protect our hibernating bats.
I see, and I want to talk about the bats for sure. First, I want to switch back over to Jennifer Evans from Crater Lake National Park and ask the same question about this almost 15% increase in visitorship. Does the place itself pay in some way for more people coming to see Crater Lake?
Well, I think all visitors to the national park have some sort of impact, but I don't think that we're at carrying capacity definitely at Crater Lake. So we want to welcome as many visitors as we'll be okay here at the park. I think that it's a challenge for us to find a way to accommodate people of diverse desires and needs as more and more people come to enjoy their national parks. We have road projects in place to improve the roads. We have an expansion of the Cleetwood Cove parking lot to accommodate more people who are trying to get down to the lake. So the park definitely has to react to more visitors, and we're doing that. But we're here for people to visit, so we're definitely welcoming to more people.
And, you know, the park fees for Crater Lake National Park, over 600,000 visitors in 2015, does that money all go back into the park operations, or does any of it flow upward in the system?
So the park fees, 80% of park fees collected here at Crater Lake National Park stay in the park and are spent directly on things that benefit the visitor. So additional interpretive programs, programs to improve facilities that visitors are using. The other 20% go further up, and they help support other parks.
Jennifer, do you expect the increase? You mentioned that the lack of snow in 2015 may have driven this 15% increase in visitorship. Do you think that the dumps we got in this last season are going to bring those numbers back down?
Well, I know that we definitely have not received as many visitors in the first 3 months of 2016 that we did in the first 3 months of 2015.
Uh-huh.
So we probably won't see the jump that we did in 2015. We're right about at average, a little bit under average for snowfall since October 1st. which is a good thing for the region.
We're talking with Jennifer Evans. She's a spokesperson for Crater Lake National Park. Also with us, George Herring, Chief of Interpretation from Oregon Caves, and John Roth. He's a Chief of Resource Management for the Oregon Caves. That's a national monument and preserve, all managed by the National Park Service, which turns 100 this August. George Herring from Oregon Caves, are there any centennial celebrations planned in honor of the Park Service's turning 100?
Well, I think the one that's most immediate is coming May 7th. Just a little over a week from now, we're going to have our community open house, and that's partially to celebrate the centennial. That will be free tours for the public, and we're going to have the local Great Cats Park, Junior Ranger Table, Oregon Cavemen, all having representation during that day. And we're also going to have something called a pop-up museum. We're inviting the community to bring up any memorabilia that they have, memories of the park, to come up, display their objects, and to share their stories. So I would say that's a thing that's happening right now to celebrate.
And when we talk about, I think the terminology is gateway community, where you have all of these places where people live within 60 miles or so of the park. George, what kinds of businesses, other than the obvious, you know, hotels and gas stations or restaurants, what kinds of vendors or partners within the local community does the Oregon Caves work with?
Well, I'm not 100% sure I understand the question, but I would probably point to things like when we have any water issues at the park, we bring in local plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
The electrical issues, we bring in local electricians. And you can imagine other types of jobs like that. And those are all integral to the keeping the park running, and the park in turn provides money for those folks to make a living.
Jennifer, did that question ring any bells for you?
Well, I think that we have some commercial use authorizations, so people, permit holders that do business in the park, bicycle tours that bring their customers into the park to do tours, photographers that come into the park to do their work, things like that. We have about 20 commercial use authorizations, so that would be an additional business that would be affected by the park.
So I've got one here, just whoever feels comfortable chiming in, but I would like to have a bit more of a regional perspective on the impact of the parks. I was looking across the state line at California, and this 2015 economic impact report showed across the state of California, $2.5 billion in economic benefits to communities that are tied to national parks. And they also have the most parks and monuments of any other state. In Oregon, that figure was much, much smaller, $114 million. Do we just have less parks? Is it a difference in strictly that?
Well, we definitely have fewer park units. I think we also have far fewer people, and the visitation is probably a lot lower. I don't know what the total visitation is for Oregon National Parks. Maybe the other people on the line know, but it's a much smaller than California parks.
Yeah, this is George. We definitely do have fewer visitors up here, but something about California to think about is the Bay Area, Sacramento. Those are large population centers with large airports, with large flagship parks like Yosemite and Sequoia, Kings Canyon. Crater Lake is certainly a world treasure. We at the Caves think we are too. But when you have someplace like Yosemite close to such population centers, I think that drives some of the numbers you're talking about.
And I want to kick it over to John Roth. He is Chief of Resource Management at Oregon Caves and has been with us for this time. John, there's some concerning news out of Washington State recently involving one little brown bat diagnosed with white nose syndrome. Should we be concerned about that?
We are concerned, of course, and more so than we have in the past. But there's a few things to consider that number one is we have a very good program here to prevent the entry of white nose into the cave. If you think about it, we have 45,000 people come through the caves every year or so, and many, probably thousands, from infected areas in Europe, many parts of Europe, parts of China, even parts of Siberia. And so, and yet we have not had a single case of white nose here. So That's compared to a single species, single individual in Washington. So we think our system's working here. And, of course, we wouldn't be able to work it well if we didn't have the incredible support that we have from visitors coming here and being willing to decontaminate themselves, even not knowing exactly what that means, which basically is really simple wipes, hydrogen peroxide or other types of wipes on their shoes and that sort of thing.
John, I want to back you up for just a second. I probably jumped in too fast here. Can you just lay out for us in a few seconds, really, why white nose syndrome is scary and what it is before we talk about how to decontaminate?
Right. White nose syndrome is a fungus that has killed at least 6 million bats in the United States, all over them, of course, in the eastern United States. And so we're concerned that bats will travel across the country and infect our bats here. And so we're trying to prevent any spores from entering, for example, into Oregon caves. It's the worst disease epidemic in wildlife that's ever been recorded.
Wow, that's quite a title. I mean, is there a apocalypse plan, I guess, a contingency plan for the Oregon caves of how you would respond and how are you keeping track of that threat?
We keep track of the threats by using UV lights on our bats because the fungus will show up under UV as an orange glow. And so far we haven't seen that. We haven't seen any visual signs either. I should say mention also that if white nose actually gets into Oregon itself, we will not be closing the cave. The cave will always be open. We'll probably change our techniques in terms of decontamination, mostly decontaminating people after they leave the cave so as not to spread the spores. But we're concerned, not that concerned in terms of the types of bats that we have in the cave that hibernate are called Townsend big-eared bats, and they also occur in the eastern United States, different subspecies and species. They don't get it, even though they get spores on, they don't exhibit the disease because they have different hibernation patterns. They wake up more often, groom the fungus off their bodies, so they're not nearly as affected as some of the other types of bats in the eastern United States.
I see. I mean, fascinating. So you have a UV, a wand of some sort that you go out and shine it on the bats and just hope that none of them glow orange. What's the procedure for actually checking the bats to make sure white nose doesn't enter the caves?
It's just a regular flashlight that emits UV, and of course we use face shields and glasses to prevent our eyes from being harmed by the UV.
So we are talking this hour right now with John Roth. He's chief of resource management. A bit of an aside here, talking about the potential for white nose syndrome in the Oregon caves after it was discovered in Washington earlier this year. Also with us, George Herring, chief of interpretation from Oregon Caves National Monument, and Jennifer Evans, a spokesperson from Crater Lake. Jennifer, are there pressing environmental concerns linked with perhaps increased traffic or other things that Crater Lake is concerned about being such a heavily visited place?
Well, yes. Of course, increased visitation is going to have its impact. Right now, invasive species, and especially in terms of vegetation, are a big issue. A lot of plants that are non-native to Crater Lake Park are being brought into the park. We're in the process of writing an environmental assessment for an invasive plant management plan, so actually putting a plan in place to halt the spread of invasives and then take care of the ones that are already here. And then we have a lot of monitoring work that is just continuing throughout the year, so monitoring for things like owl surveys and other wildlife throughout the park that, while maybe not endangered or threatened, are definitely have a refuge here within Crater Lake Park, so we don't want to affect their habitat.
What are the invasives of concern for Crater Lake?
I know bull thistle is one, And our botanist could probably give you a litany, a very long list of invasives that she's concerned about. But they come in mostly with through cars and then people who are hiking through the park.
So George Herring, Chief of Interpretation from Oregon Caves, as you guys hopefully create more access to the park and drive more visitors there, what do you hope, you know, for the next 100 years of national parks and specifically at the one you work at, Oregon Caves?
Well, the hope for national parks is written into our legislation. It's to preserve the parks, and we do that for the use and enjoyment of all visitors. And we want to do that in a way so that visitors 100 years from now will have the same experience. I think that's the underlying purpose of what we do. That's what we're celebrating with the centennial this year.
And Jennifer Evans from Crater Lake, are there any special centennial celebrations? George, you mentioned that on May 7th there are free tours for the community at the Oregon Caves, an open house happening. Sounds like a lot of fun and just around the corner. I think that's next Saturday. Jennifer, what about Crater Lake? Anything on deck in honor of the centennial of the National Park Service?
Well, we're still covered in a lot of snow right now, so we don't have any big events that are coming up very soon. But we probably our centerpiece event this summer for the centennial is a concert that we're doing in cooperation with the Brit. And it's a New York-based composer, Michael Gordon, has written a piece that's specifically inspired by Crater Lake. And it will be performed at the lake on 2 days, July 29th and the 30th, up somewhere within view of the lake.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we talk more with you about that on this program. That about wraps up our time for today. We've been speaking with Jennifer Evans from Crater Lake National Park. Jennifer, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also spoke with George Herring, Chief of Interpretation from Oregon Caves, and John Roth from Oregon Caves. George and John, thanks so much for joining the exchange.
Thanks, Roger.